Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
All right, Reg. How are you doing, my friend? Get this. Every time, this microphone. All right, here we go. How are you feeling today? Good. I'm good. I'm a little nasal. Yeah, I'll admit that. I'm a little nasal, but we're still here. We're still ready to go. The instrument is still in good shape. But yeah, this has been a lingering cold, no question about that. It's pretty bad a couple of weeks ago, but it's still a little clogged. I'm not as energy depleted as I was for a week or so, but yeah, this is lingering. So hopefully with the spring ahead us, this will all go away. But we're ready. I'm ready to go. The instrument's in good shape, so let's do this thing. Give you three S's, star, smile, strong. Get ready. Get that trigger finger on the button. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Well, of course, it's important to listen every week. I think it's just as important to get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. And of course, if you like what you hear, whether you've been listening for 10 minutes, 10 days, or even approaching 10 years, you can always get your fill of this more than just once a week, because if you go to WGNRadio.com and you go to the podcast section, you hit the prompt for this podcast, and there are podcasts from the past, stretching back several years. So just load more and scroll down and load more and scroll down and just listen away, if you will, to what we've done in the past. As I frequently say, it's always good to listen where we've been so you know where we might be going. And right now, we are going to episode 508. So, it's been a pretty wild couple of weeks here in the news and in our world on several fronts. As I've said many times, I do record the podcast before it is posted every Monday. So depending on how timely a topic I'm talking about, there is a chance sometimes that what I'm talking about and what was the reality of the day that I was recording by the 2 or 3 days later that it's posted, those situations may have changed somewhat. Case in point, a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about America going back to the moon, and how, interestingly enough, while this is should be considered a huge, huge accomplishment and new priority and big deal, considering how America was the first country to put a man on the moon safely and return him to Earth several times from 1969 to 1972, it has been, you know, more than almost 54 years now, almost, that that we have gone back to the moon in any way. And while we weren't landing on the moon as part of Artemis II, this upcoming mission is a way to take the first step there. And if all goes well with this upcoming Artemis II mission, then we indeed, the next phase, the next step of this overall mission, Artemis III, will be to land humans on the moon again for the first time since 1969. Or, I mean, I'm sorry, since 1972 was the last time we were there. And so I was talking about that. I was trying to be as very timely, because that's the key, right? To always be talking about what's going on. And so I recorded that podcast about a week or so before the scheduled launch on February 6th, which was the initial day that it was supposed to be, so that this podcast would be would be posting on the that Monday of that week, so it would be very timely. But of course, I even prefaced this during the podcast, because I know how fragile these launches can be, and especially, as I said, when you are putting human beings into space as opposed to just maybe sending some hardware up to explore and come back. That's one thing. I mean, everybody involved in any kind of NASA project of any kind wants to make sure that it is everything is according to what should be, and every I is dotted and T is crossed. We don't want the effort and the money and the just the overall importance of the mission, regardless of whether it's human based or mechanically based, is important. That we want to succeed in our missions, and so obviously every precaution is taken for everyone, but especially when we're going to send human beings up there, it's even more imperative that everything goes right. And as these launches are susceptible to many different elements that can cause, I mean, these things, really everything has to be just perfect, which is a high order when you think about it. But there's so many intangibles and things that while we can in many ways control, there's other things that we can't control. The main one being the weather. You can have this multi-billion-dollar rocket that is filled with different types of physics and complexities and fuels and the joke about being a rocket scientist, there's something to that, right? That's and then at the same time, while you can have this extremely sophisticated and complex mechanism, perfect to in every way, if it's cloudy or if it's windy, you can't do it. You can't send it up. So you could have all the man-made things, and yet once again, Mother Nature always proves who's really in charge here. We always try to pretend that we have some control over our planet and our galaxy, whatever, and we really don't. At the end of the day, nature always proves, beyond a shadow of a doubt, who's in charge. And sure enough, as wild as it may seem, a few weeks ago, you may recall that the country got blasted with a polar vortex or whatever it was, some majorly cold, frigid, below zero weather came charging in to the United States. And while usually in the winter, it usually this happens. Those of us who certainly live in the Midwest know that this will happen with the air coming from the north, from Canada and the Arctic Circle, will come down and kind of clip us in the upper Midwest. But usually the South remains mostly immune to the bitter cold. It may get a little colder than it usually does in the South, but the South is all, of course, getting its weather from the Southern Hemisphere more than from the Northern Hemisphere. But for whatever reason, this major polar vortex came in and just blanketed a major part of the United States, north and south, to the point where there were temperatures and weather conditions that people in the south, in the southern states, had never dealt with before. And of course, right in the midst of that is when, and so I always say, you know, you should always be careful about planning a trip in February, especially early February, because you can never really, you know, in January and February, you're sort of, you know, playing with the fates there, because the weather can change on a dime. And so, of course, in the midst of all this, I mean, don't forget, you know, this Artemis II was supposed to take off from Florida, where even in the winter, you know, it's 50 degrees or 60 degrees or 70 degrees or 80 degrees. You know, there. I mean, how many times is the Super Bowl in Florida because of that reason? And yet, in the first week of February, or leading up to that first week, suddenly this polar vortex comes in, and Florida is hit with daytime temperatures, not nighttime temperatures, daytime temperatures in the 30s. And even in the lower, upper 20s, and not snow, but I mean, certainly places like Georgia and places like that, in the South, we're getting ice, thick ice. Tennessee, this was unheard of, in the South parts of the United States. And so, of course, right in the midst of, I think on the day that the podcast got posted, that first week of February, to talk about how we're going to the moon. And my point was, we're going to the moon again, and nobody seems to care. And how come? Well, then, of course, trying to be as timely as I could be with the fact that I do record this is not live when it's posted. I think that day or the next day after it was posted that week, NASA announced that the cold weather that came in to Florida would cause a cancellation of at least a couple of days. And then there was a chance that it might actually go up on the 8th as opposed to the 6th. And that was still kind of tentative. So first we had a weather issue, and then they were still staying with the 8th, which was Super Bowl Sunday, in fact, to launch this. And then they were still doing a battery of tests before that launch. And then apparently they found a leak of some kind of liquid. I don't know if it was fuel or some kind of liquid, as I said before, in this very complex rocket. And so they decided that now we have to figure out where this leak came from and repair that, and once again make sure that there are absolutely no problems at all, since we're sending humans up. And so now, as it stands, all the February potential alternate dates were wiped out. And so now, as it stands, they're aiming for sometime in March. And so we'll see. As I had mentioned in the podcast, the NASA, you know, once again, if there's anything about NASA, they're very good at planning and looking ahead. They have to have alternate options, because, as I said, everything has to be just perfect, and there's some controllable elements, and then there's some uncontrollable elements to this, and weather being a major one of them. And so they even had built into their schedule, the plan was to launch this in February, but they also had several dates in February, several dates in March if February couldn't be met for whatever reason, and even dates into April. So there's still no guarantees that even the March launch will happen. Hopefully this will happen in the next 2 or 3 months, but it was scheduled for February 6th. And so, as I said, I try to be as timely as I can, but sometimes you get interrupted by reality. And that could be possibly here what I want to talk about today. So I'm giving you, once again, a little preface. Trying to be as timely as I can, try to keep this podcast as, you know, as up to date on things and in the moment as possible. So I will be talking about this as it stands today, as I'm talking about it in the reality of today, but circumstances in some cases may change. So please keep that in mind as you listen when this is actually posted on Monday. If the situations that I'm talking about have changed, well, try to put yourself back at least a couple of days from where things were. But if not, if everything sort of stays where it is right now, then this is going to be a very timely topic. Hey, that's the chances that you take when you record something. But as I was saying, the last couple of weeks here have been, and even this year, I mean, and even this last, I mean, this last, this year, I mean, I'm meaning 2026, this last month and a half of the new year, as well as the past year, has been very chaotic. And if you're going to be honest with you, the last, you know, 15 years, 20 years have been very chaotic. If we're really going to be honest about things, this has been an interesting century, not just the last decade, not just the last couple of years, not just the last year. But if we want to be really honest, this century so far has been a tough one, a tough one. I mean, even though the calendar said that we started the new millennium, and once again, remember all that? Remember all that controversy about a new millennium? Did the millennium really start on January 1st, 2000, or did it really start on January 1st, 2001, because there was no, you know, we started at zero? There was all that controversy, and of course now no one thinks about or cares about that anymore, but at the time it was like a big deal. But my point is, you can look at the beginning of this century and say, you know, things have been a little chaotic when you think about that we were in Iran, Iraq at the time. Remember that? I mean, you can look at the year and say this century in terms of historical importance probably really start. Well, historically looking at it, we were in chaos right from the beginning. At the beginning of this millennial, of this millennium in 2000, this country at least was chaotic. And 25 years and change now later, it's no different. It's worse, probably, but we started with chaos, if you think about it. We started with a constitutional crisis. And we might have, and we have one right now, with many people talking about the constitutional crisis that we're in. But we began this century with a constitutional crisis, if you think about it. The election of George Bush over Al Gore in the 2000 election, in November of 2000, you know, things were chaotic right from the start. I mean, yes, okay, there was a January 1st, 2000, fine, I understand that. You know, Bill Clinton was still president, things like that. But my point is that in November of that year, we had an election that was as chaotic as we've ever had, especially for president, with who won. Questions about the ballots, and remember the hanging chads. There's some people who are listening right now or in their early 20s who have no idea of this. They may have heard about it, but they don't really, they didn't live through it. But just 25 years ago, in November of 2000, we had a constitutional crisis where, at the end of the day, the Supreme Court decided who became president. Not the final vote totals. We really don't know what those vote totals were because of the hanging. It was so close between George Bush and Al Gore. It was so close, and there was a lot of voting irregularities, and this is 25 years ago, so things were not as automated as they are now. We were still using paper ballots with punches and hanging chads, they were called, those little remnants. When you punch a perforated hole with a pen that were hanging. Was it punched through? Was it not? They were called hanging chads. But our first major election for president in the new millennium was filled with chaos and division. And 25 years later now, we've only built on that division and that chaos, it seems. I know things seem chaotic now, but they really have not been smooth. It's not been smooth sailing for a long time. This is not just in the last year or 10 years. This has been for this century. When they write about the 21st century historically, in another 50 or 60 or 70 or 80 years, it's going to be a very interesting first paragraph, because where the 20th century began with great promise and innovation and the industrial age and great strides in many things that helped the average person's life in terms of medicine and our capabilities, great inventions and conveniences that we never had before, that spread well into throughout the 20th century. The 21st century, at least, here in the United States, started with division and started with then a horrific event, 9/11. And you could really look from 9/11 in 2001 and say, and so you look at the craziness of the election that wasn't settled until 2001. I believe it was sometime in January, finally, when the Supreme Court was finally decided on that, early January. And Al Gore did not appeal it or anything like that, and so George Bush was president. But then just 9 months later, we have 9/11 happening, which completely changed the entire tenor of the United States, as well as the entire world. Leaders from around the world were shocked at the audacity of the 9/11 attacks. And it divided the country and divided the world. And that division has only continued today. So we are in chaotic times today. There is no question about that. And we are in great division. But in all honesty, it's been going on for about 25 years. It's just continued to advance and escalate. And hopefully somewhere a de-escalation will happen. But because we're in these chaotic times, I'm just looking at the last couple of weeks, and I've noticed how we are getting more desperate. We've had so much controversy, as I said, and chaos, especially what's been going on in Minneapolis over the last month and a half with the immigration enforcement. And here in the Chicago area, we had a taste of that for the last 6 months or so, with ICE first being here in the suburbs of Chicago, actually not far from where I live, where that detention center, I believe, is still there. I don't know how much it's being used now, but that was not far away. And I don't know if I ever told you, but one day I was driving on the highway not far from my home when this started in the summer, in the fall, and things like that. And I saw the helicopters hovering over that area. As I was driving on the highway, I'm like, that doesn't look like a traffic helicopter. A lot of times, they'll have those traffic copters that fly over the major highways to talk about, traffic patterns and if things are flowing or not. But this helicopter was hovering and was much lower than usual. And to the point where I could see it, I'm like, hey, wait a minute, that's like a green camouflage helicopter. That's not some, you know, commercial helicopter that belongs to a radio station or a television station. That's a military helicopter. It felt freaky for a second. Like, whoa, what the heck is that? So believe me, even from a detached sense of that entire event there, I still was able to feel it to some extent. And it was uneasy. It was an uneasy feeling. But we've certainly seen the chaos level, the sense of just what's going on level for people just taking on a new height. It's been building and it's been building and it's been building for 25 years. Certainly in many people's minds and from many people's perspectives, it has been escalating over the last 10 and certainly in the last year. But in all honesty, it's been going on for much longer. And I just noticed in the last couple of weeks, as the chaos level seems to have risen already within the first month and a half of this year, we always look ahead to a new year with great anticipation and hope and optimism. And right off the bat, it's been more hectic and more chaotic than even it seemed at the end of last year. And so it seems like because of that, a natural human response is that, you know, we want a break. We want a break from this constant drumbeat of chaos and division. I think at the end of the day, as much as some people are very committed to their causes and their opinions and their feelings on certain issues, and everybody has a right to do that. That's part of the American experience. But it also takes a toll on the American psyche and on your personal emotion and your personal emotional state. And I think anybody, you know, if you, at the end of the day, you know, you have to admit, even the most fierce and committed and dedicated warrior for their cause, whatever side you're on, you have to admit by the end of the day, as passionate as you may be about your opinion and your side, I'm sure that when you're done, especially if you're out there protesting or working or something like that, very active, and once again, whichever side you're on, I think you would have to be honest that when you come home, it has taken a toll on your psyche and your emotional state. I mean, your commitment to your opinion and your activism is certainly admired, as I said, regardless of whatever side you're on. And fighting for a bigger cause than yourself is certainly admirable. But I think at the end of the day, you also have to admit that it's taking or has taken some kind of a emotional toll on you. You can't stay that impassioned and that focused and that enraged without it taking some kind of a toll on your mental state. And so when we, in those times then of recharging, of relaxation, if there is any, if you're in that, or once again, you don't have to be somebody on the lines. You have to be out there with signs or whatever you're doing. It just, you know, we are all affected by this, whether we're out there protesting on one side or the other, or just watching it from, you know, on our television sets. Or even in my case, like I said, I wasn't in the middle of it, but I was just on the periphery of it when I saw these helicopters flying over, and I was like, "Ooh, this is weird." Regardless of the situation, it was just, it felt odd to see military helicopters flying over my neighborhood. And it really struck home as to, well, how, this is not just some little game on television. This is something kind of serious here. Because every so often we do get a little desensitized if we're just watching it on TV. And hearing, and really the sound of that helicopter is what was daunting. Not just seeing it hovering much lower over the highway in that area where the detention center was not far from where the highway I was on. But it was the sound of the rotors that it, I felt like I was watching Platoon or some movie from Vietnam. It was that weird. And so, yeah, we're all touched by this, whether we're on the front lines or just observing from the other side, whether you support one side or not. We can't help but be affected about the chaos and the division that has been going on, especially in this country, if not in this world, over the last 25 years. And I will say that. It's not just the last year. It's not just the last 10 years. This has been going on. And so we can't help but be personally affected by this, whether we acknowledge it on a regular basis or not. But believe me, there's a toll being taken. And so when we're looking to be rejuvenated or refreshed or to take a break from the chaos, we look outside for something to give us some solace. And for many of us, it's the arts could possibly be that, whether it's music or movies or plays or, you know, sports or other current events that are happening around. Because as much as our world might be dominated, especially where the news organizations present it, might be dominated by specific events on a day-to-day basis, there's a lot going on a daily basis in this world. And so we try to distract ourselves from whatever we're into at that moment to take a breather and look for a little hope and optimism, because in our current world on a daily basis, it may seem like things are not so optimistic. And so we look outside of things for that little solace, that rejuvenation, that sense of hope and that sense of optimism. And so a lot of times, as I said, it could be sports. It could be humans' interest stories. It could be things that are going on in the world, other news events. It could be things in our own personal lives. But amidst the chaos, I think we're always looking for some way to, you know, find a little ray of hope amidst what might seem like the clouds or the darkness. And what's been interesting is we've seen a few of those over the last couple of weeks amidst all this, chaos, especially that's been going on in Minneapolis in January. That's made headlines every day, and the murder of two people. We look around and we say, "Oh gosh, can I get a dose of good news? Something that's inspiring to me, or potentially inspiring to me, to distract me, or at least to give me a counterbalance to all the chaos around me, whether it's, you know, your own personal situation," which we all have those chaoses, right? As well as in the larger universal picture of what we're all involved in. And there's been a couple of those. That's why I was saying is that, you know, the space launch could be one of those things. A chance for not only the United States, but humanity to once again, you know, the entire world to kind of rally around and say, wow, this is great. We're doing something for the sake, in a positive way, of exploration. We're pushing our boundaries. This is inspiring. And yet, as I said in the podcast a couple weeks ago, it felt like our chaos was even overcoming that. And here it was, hopefully, a possible event to unite us. And now we will see. Now I've thrown it out there. Now you have a month to ruminate over that. So as the March launch date comes for that, I hope you will think about that and maybe give this lunar project, Artemis II, a little more of your attention, a little more of your optimism. And, of course, at the same time all this is going on, a few things were going on. We had the Super Bowl. In fact, what a weekend it was. It would have been quite a weekend if that Artemis II lunar mission had gone off on the day it was supposed to, the 6th. You would have had a lunar launch for the first time since 1972 with humans aboard. You would have had the opening ceremonies of the Winter Olympics in Italy, in Milan, in Cortina. And then on Sunday, you'd have the biggest sporting event in the country, the Super Bowl. So, wow, talk about three major, potentially unifying events that amidst all this chaos of the last month and a half or so, all this uncertainty and anger and rage, here within one weekend, the moon launch was scrapped for a while, but you still had the Olympics, which is the whole idea of the Olympics, is this global coming together and celebration of human sacrifice and achievement as countries come together. I mean, that's what the Olympics are all about. They may not have been like that when they started in Greece, but that's what they've become to symbolize, this global unification, this global coming together. So that's what a perfect time for that to have happened amidst all this chaos that was going on in Minneapolis. And then 2 days later, the Super Bowl, the one remaining uniting event. Because now the Oscars aren't even that. They're going to go to YouTube television in a few years, and so the Oscars now are going to be pretty much irrelevant. Which, if you've been listening to this podcast over the last several years, you know I predicted that there's going to come a time when it's just Super Bowl and Academy Awards. And that's it. And I even said that award shows need to be disbanded because they're really not relevant anymore. I've been saying that for several years, and they're almost it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy once they take the Oscars off of national television, free network television, put it on YouTube, which is a paid service. The Academy Awards in 2029. I believe 2029, go to YouTube, off of ABC, off of free television. And I have to tell you that I would think that after that, the Academy Awards become a marginalized event. And it really then leaves the Super Bowl as the last unifying event where on one day, at one time, live, the world, and certainly America, a great portion of America, are all watching and experiencing the same thing at the same time. That used to be the status quo. Once again, in the last 25 or 30 years, as the internet and social media have risen, we have become a fractured society in many ways, not just politically, not just ideologically, but behaviorally. And the Super Bowl is that last remaining kind of unifying universal event. And yet even this year we saw that even the Super Bowl became a division, became a dividing point based on the choice of performers for the halftime show. 15 minutes a 15-minute halftime show became a major source of division. Once again, regardless of what side you came on, regardless of whether you thought the choice of Bad Bunny and what his performance was all about, whether you loved it or you hated it, regardless, the fact is those were the only two opinions. People either loved it, they celebrated it for its joy and its message and its freedom, or they condemned it for it, potentially alienating people. There was no middle ground, as there isn't in anything anymore. So even the Super Bowl now, 15 minutes, that's like a four-hour extravaganza from the beginning when they start to do some of the pre-game things to the actual end of the game. It's like a four-hour extravaganza, and those 15 minutes inspired chaos and resentment and division. So now, while the Super Bowl itself is a somewhat unifying event, at least in theory, but then within it, we found place to be divided. And so between this division and this chaos, we're being bombarded and we're looking for some feel-goods. We need some feel-goods here, right? We need some communal, universal, unifying feel-goods. And even though the Super Bowl, it turned out that the game was boring, and then there was this controversy within the game of this 15 minutes, which divided people. So even our unifying events now, we're finding ways to insert division within those. Aside from the natural division of the competitiveness of one team versus the other, but we found another cultural reason to divide ourselves within what looked to be, hopefully, an event that was for one day, for 4 hours, a unifying event. And now we've inserted the division in there. So we're looking for a feel-good. We're looking for some optimism. We're looking for some olive branch for our emotional psyche so we can feel good. And not just feel good personally, but feel good collectively. As I said, it's going to be a very interesting 4th of July this year. Remember where you heard this. This is going to be a very interesting 4th of July. Because as we celebrate our 250th birthday, we are also going to be celebrating perhaps one of the most divided eras of our history. And while I was around for the bicentennial, and even though that was a chaotic time, people still were waving their flags on 4th of July. There was still, there was uncertainty and division at that time in 1976. Things were far from perfect. We still put aside those differences to celebrate our country. And I don't know if that is going to be the same sentiment 50 years later. So just keep that in the back pocket for now. We're far away from July, and things can change, but I don't know. If things stay on this road, it's going to be a very interesting 4th of July. Oh, we'll have the fireworks and we'll have all the pageantry, but I think there's going to be a lot of other things going on that 4th of July to celebrate our 250th birthday. And it's not going to be a lot of flag waving all the time. So anyway, we're looking, amidst all this chaos, we're looking for a bright spot. And we've got the Super Bowl and we've got the Olympics that are kind of right here. Then, and so the Super Bowl had its moments, but it also kind of lost that opportunity as the halftime show became such a divided thing. So we're looking around for some optimism and hope. So there's the Olympics, as I said, this event that is founded on, at least in the last, many decades as this unifying global event to bring the countries together in a spirit of competition and a celebration of the human spirit and the human aspiration to succeed. Okay? And everybody competing on the same playing fields and coming together and supporting each other. Competing, yes, but also supporting each other. And what a unifying thing. So that's what, at least in theory, that's what the Olympics are meant to be. And they try to certainly hit that message every day, all the time, every Olympics, whether it's summer or winter. Now, we know that the Olympics have become flashpoints for politics, too. And I mentioned that. The 1936 games in Berlin with Hitler and Jesse Owens and Nazism hadn't taken hold yet in terms of the beginning of World War II. That wasn't until 1939, but there's no question that Hitler was beginning his agenda at that time, and the Aryan supremacy and the white supremacy and the anti-Semitism was a major part of his rise. And when the world came to Berlin, there was a lot of talk about the United States boycotting the Olympics in 1936 because of the growing anti-Semitism and white supremacy of the Nazi regime before World War II, 3 years before it. And of course, the celebrated moment when the American athlete Jesse Owens, an African-American, dominated by winning three medals and actually causing Hitler to walk out of the stadium because Jesse Owens was the personification of the false narrative that Hitler was trying to indoctrinate his country on about white supremacy and the Aryan nation and anti-Semitism. And here was an African-American athlete who was spitting in the face of that narrative. But the Olympics have always been politicized. In 1980, well, obviously, there was an attack on the Israeli team in the 70s in Munich, which was horrific. Once again, in the mid-70s, it was a tough time. It was 1972. The 70s were not a great time. Everybody thinks, oh, the 70s were so cool, hip, man. Flower power was still around, and we had disco and good vibes, and it was a tough time, man. There was a lot of chaos in the 70s. We try to whitewash it, but it wasn't. And then, of course, in 1980, the United States, because of Russia's aggressiveness around the world, we boycotted the Olympics in 1980. And so that we're in Russia. So they've always been politicized. And so here we were again now in this time to say, well, maybe hopefully we can get we didn't boycott the Olympics in 1980. That's completely wrong. What am I saying? Because we actually won the gold medal in 1980. No, I'm sorry. We did not boycott the Olympics in 1980. We boycott the Summer Olympics. We didn't boycott the Olympics in general. So I just want to, create the differentiation. We hosted the Olympics in Lake Placid in 1980. And of course, we beat the Russians in hockey. And we won the gold medal ultimately in hockey, which is, of course, a miracle. And watch there's a Netflix. There's a Netflix documentary on right now about that 1980 Olympic hockey team, which you should see it. If you lived through it, it's great to see it again. And if you never did, you need to learn a little piece of that history. It's a great, great story, which is something I sort of write along the lines of what I'm talking about here. But yeah, you know, we did boycott the Summer Olympics, which were in Moscow, because of the Soviets' invasion of Afghanistan and their aggression. So yeah, the Olympics have always sadly been politicized. And so here we are looking for, as I said before, that ray of hope. Wow. In the middle, perfect example, looking for a ray of hope in the middle of chaos, just as I was just saying here. The 1980 Olympic hockey team rallied this country probably for the first time in a unifying way that hadn't been seen probably since 1945, at the end of World War II. As I said, the 70s were a tough time. The beginning, the middle, and the end. At the end of the decade, in 1979, not only was our economy in shambles, there was a unemployment, high interest rates, there was a malaise, there was a sense that America had lost its pride and its superiority and its place in the world. The American psyche had been down. And then in the midst of that, there was the Iranian hostage situation where more than 50 people were taken hostage in the United States Embassy for more than a year, which just added to our kind of disappointment. And wow, what's happening here? There was no good news. We were looking for some fairy tale, you know, to lift us out. And out of the craziest odds, the 1980 hockey team in Lake Placid pulled off the upset of the century by a ragtag team of a bunch of unknown college players beating the best hockey team, which was filled with quasi-professionals, really, the Russian army team, defeating them and then going on to win the gold medal, which was just seemed like an impossibility. As I said, go on Netflix now and watch the this new documentary about the Olympic hockey team. Very similar into the kind of area that we are now. We're very chaotic, stuff going on, affordability, economic. We're in a state of great tumult and transition and uncertainty, and we're looking for that ray of hope. So here's the Olympics, for instance. And here is this story that is easy for us to grab upon. And what I'm talking about is Lindsey Vonn. This is a great American skier, gold medalist. She retires several years ago, and then she comes back, and at age 41, she says, "I'm coming back to the Olympics." I mean, let's face it. When it comes to, athletes, I mean, their prime is probably in their mid to late 20s to their early 30s. And then just physically, the capabilities begin to die. Some athletes can extend that. Most recently, Tom Brady, well into his 40s, continued to perform at a high level, but then even Tom Brady showed signs that it was time. Michael Jordan had retired, and then he came back, sadly, and while it doesn't tarnish his great achievements, when he came back to play for the Washington Wizards, it just wasn't the same. The body declines, and athletes, and it's the hardest thing for an athlete to address that, to recognize that, and to accept it, because it's always been there, and they've always been able to count on it. whatever that it is, they were given it. They worked at it. They perfected it, but they were born with an inherent it in terms of physical and athletic ability. And they certainly, as I said before, developed it, and they could always count on it. And then as they get older, they go back to those same instincts, those same things, and yet the performance isn't there anymore. And it's hard for any athlete. Every athlete has gone through that. And some have been able to walk away from the game, and some have stayed much too long after the decline began, but they've just weren't able to accept it. But so amidst all this chaos, here's Lindsey Vonn, a perfect chance. Nothing political about this. This is just one person's plight to say, I'm going to overcome the odds. I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to sacrifice. I'm going to train, and I'm going to beat the odds. Yes, I know I'm 41 years old. I know that I'm going to be competing against people 20 years younger than me, but I still feel like I have got that ability. And so she makes the Olympic team. Okay, what a huge, huge accomplishment. Once again, given the fact that she was injured before many times in her career, she came back, that she had retired, was not doing any more, intense workouts to stay in Olympic shape, and then decided that she was coming back and makes the Olympic team and is on her way to compete in the Olympics. Wow, what a story. Here's a chance for us to take a little breather from all the chaos, and if we're in search of that fairy tale ending, if we're in search of that improbable miracle that will make us feel good about ourselves in some way, but on the about the human condition and about the circumstancing surrounds us as a great distraction, an inspiring story, it's Lindsey Vonn. And so we're all hoping and, keeping our fingers crossed that she's done this training and she's on the Olympic team and the Olympics are starting, and hey, here's somebody to root for. The ultimate underdog. We love underdogs. And even though she's an Olympic skater, or Olympic skier, she's certainly in an underdog position as it stands right now, given her age, given her time away from the sport. What a great story. What a chance for us to restart and re-energize ourselves amidst all the chaos that's been around us over the last year, or at least even the last month or so. Oh, here's a breakthrough moment. And then, a week before the Olympics, I mean, Lindsey Vonn's story was being hyped by everybody. This is why you're going to want to watch the Olympics. Yeah, there's, a figure skater, the quad god and all that, but Lindsey Vonn is a known entity, and she is the Cinderella story, the underdog story of this Olympics, and everybody is rooting for her, and we all want to feel good, and we're all... And then tragedy strikes. A week before, horribly unfair. There's no question about that. After several years of intense training and focus and commitment to push her body to a level that it's probably did not even want to be pushed to, given her age. But she beat those odds. She was tenacious in her training. She was able to rely on her talent and ability and was able to push herself with great grit and great motivation to achieve this goal. I mean, ultimately, she would want to win the gold medal, but even any kind of a medal would be a great accomplishment given her age, given the fact that she had retired, given her history of injury. It was a fairy tale ending. It was a feel-good story just waiting to happen. And just before it could happen, a catastrophic event happens. And in a trial run, in a practice run, she seriously injures herself. Blows out her knee, her ACL. Anybody who knows anything about sports knows that any player, mostly football players, it happens to them the most, but basketball players and baseball, anybody in athletics, you know, soccer, anybody, I mean, we're all using our knees and we're running and or moving our legs in some way, hockey players, anybody. The knee is the most susceptible and the most fragile. It's the most important in many ways, but it's also the most fragile for a human athlete. And so the worst happens. She sustains the worst kind of injury that an athlete can have. A blown out knee, especially if you're a skier. The ACL. I mean, when you rip these tendons, I mean, it's major surgery. It's major rehab. There's no guarantees you'll ever come back from that. It's in many ways, many times, it's a career ending injury, but at the very least, on the temporary side, you're finished. In most cases, when many football players or any athletes get a blown out ACL, they will have the surgery within days, the next day, 2 days later, to heal that knee, to work on that knee. It's imperative. You don't want it to start to heal on its own. It's majorly damaged, and it needs to be fixed quickly. And yet, Lindsey Vonn, when most people said, well, there goes her Olympic dream, there goes this feel-good fairy tale story, because she blew out her ACL a week before. It's impossible. I mean, especially the rigors of skiing, downhill skiing on ice and snow. There are times when skiers are on this on the course where they are going 80, 90 miles an hour on skis. We're driving in a car sometimes 80, 90 miles, and it feels like we don't have control. Could you imagine the only thing that you have underneath you is a pair of skis, and you're on a slippery surface, and you got a couple of poles, and you're going 80 or 90 miles an hour? The bravery of a skier like that, just to do it, and then excel at it is off the charts. But there's no question that the knee is the principal part of the human body to succeed at skiing. It's the knees. It's the turning. It's the absorption of the pressures and the weight and the physics and everything. The torque, you name it. The knee is an amazing structure. Fragile, yes, but amazing what it does on a regular basis. And when that knee is not perfect, or when it's completely damaged, well, you would think that it's over. The fairy tale ending and the Cinderella story and the hope is over. And yet, Lindsey Vonn decides to battle through it somehow. And she does not have the surgery. And she does not drop out of the Olympics, but instead huddles with doctors. I don't know what the doctors were giving her. I don't know what kind of treatments. Once again, to the layman here, I've had knee problems. I was an athlete in high school and in college, and I certainly, you know, hurt my knee. I was I played football and baseball. I was a catcher, so I was bending. I was a fullback. I was running and getting tackled. I never blew out my knee, but I certainly had a knee injury. I don't know whether, you know, back when I did it, there wasn't the sophistication of even sports medicine wasn't even a real thing back then. I probably should have had some kind of surgery. It wouldn't have been major surgery. But I know that I'm kind of bone on bone on my knee, and it's been that way. And while I was playing, I used to have some problems. I never blew it out. I never had a complete ACL tear, but I certainly had. I know what it's like to not to be able to count on your knee when you want to all the time. And I know what the pain was like, even in my situation. I can only imagine what the pain must have been like for Lindsey Vonn to have blown this knee out and then to say somehow that she is going to continue to ski and go 80 or 90 miles an hour on a knee that is far, far, far from being in perfect shape. In fact, we know it's severely damaged. I don't know what the doctors did. I don't know what the thought process was. But I know that she was too, I don't know what the word is. I mean, people have described it as grit. You can describe it that way. Or you could say in denial or stubborn. You can look at it both ways. Clearly, once again, I've been an athlete. I played through injuries. I did not, when I was hurt, I did not want to leave that field. And when my coach asked me whether I got, I probably had concussions playing football. Back in the 80s and stuff, there wasn't any concussion protocols. You got hit. I saw stars many times when I got hit. I went right back out. There was no concussion protocol. Yeah, when I hurt my knee, I missed a week of practice. When I played football, I got hit right on my knee when I was running, last play of the half, of course, got tackled on my knee, and I missed a week of practice, but I came back and played that week. I took treatments, I worked on it, I worked out, and I played in that game. You were not going to keep me off the field. That's what athletes do. Athletes will never admit they're hurt. They don't want to leave the field. It's a part of your competitive nature. You can't ask an athlete, how do you feel? They will not tell you, I'm dying right now. My knee is killing me. My ankle is killing me. My arm is killing me. They won't tell you that unless it's literally hanging off. And even then they won't tell you that. That's a part of being an athlete. You either are born with that competitive nature or you nurture it, but if you have it, you will never say, yeah, I'm hurt. So while people were admiring Lindsey Vonn's grit and competitive nature, there's no question that in terms of reality, this was a very bad decision in terms of her future. And I'm surprised that the doctors allowed her to go on. I'm surprised that the people around her, her family, were not able to dissuade her from this decision. This wasn't a minor injury she had just a week before the Olympics. In many cases, this was a catastrophic, if not career-ending, injury for any athlete. But for a skier, it should have been career-ending. It should have been considered catastrophic. And yet, for some reason, and I know the reason, she's got an amazingly strong competitive drive. No question. Brave, courageous, inspiring, grit. You can say all those things. But in the midst of all that, you have to face reality as well. And I think there was something to be said for this personal as well as this collective, everybody watching that. If you watch then when she did her run, and I'm sure you all know what happened, 13 seconds into her run, she had a catastrophic fall that has at least at this time required three surgeries for a broken leg, and who knows how many more, and who knows what her future prognosis will be. Hopefully these surgeries will work and she'll at least be able to be ambulatory and walk again. But she took such a severe fall that she easily could have killed herself, or at the very least been paralyzed. It was such a catastrophic fall. Her body was completely out of control when she hit and fell. And while she's got this horrible broken leg fracture, as I said, taking multiple surgeries, and there's still no guarantees of what the results will be. She's just still in the midst of it. She may need five more surgeries. Who knows? But the fact that she's alive is a miracle. And in reality, while we were all rooting for this, we were looking for this fairy tale ending, which was as more improbable than even the 1980 hockey team, but we were clinging to it. And she was clinging to it. But it was a catastrophe waiting to happen. And if anybody stepped aside and looked at it from a subjective view, there is no way. I'm surprised that the Olympics even let her do it. Regardless of the doctors, regardless of her family, regardless of her management, regardless of herself, I'm surprised that the Olympics would allow her to compete with that kind of a catastrophic injury. But once again, they want the ratings too. And so a lot of forces here and a lot of groups played into the delusion, played into the expectation or the deep striving and want for that fairy tale ending, that amidst all this chaos, we could have this amazing feel-good story. And then reality, the night before her run, I was watching, many shows, and they had all these experts and saying, and while they were conceding, this is a serious injury, but you know what? This is Lindsey Vonn. And she is this, and she is that, and she's a competitor, and she has grit, and all those adjectives, so you don't know Lindsey Vonn. And while I was watching this, I was getting very angry because I was like, I appreciate the attribution of this superhuman qualities on her, but this goes against physics and reality. She has got a seriously injured leg. She is going to be compensating for that when she does this run. Even psychologically, even if she doesn't physically compensate, she is aware that she's got this blown out knee, and that is a factor in how she will run this course. And people that watched her crash, it was horrific, will say, oh, well, it wasn't her knee that did it. She hit the flag and it lost her balance. Yes, but why did she hit the flag? You have to take, you can't just look at what happened. You have to see what led to what happened. When she was still at the top of that hill, she was thinking about her knee. When she started to go down that hill, she was thinking about her knee. When she made her first turn before that flag, she was thinking about her knee. Well, you know what? I better put more weight on my good knee because this other knee can't take it. So if you overcompensate, you're in trouble. She wasn't performing at the normal process because she had a serious injury that she was compensating for. And that's why she hit this flag. And whether people want to admit it or not, that's what happened. She was compensating some way. It might you might not even be able to perceive it if you show it in slow motion, but I guarantee you, in her mind, there was compensation. She was aware of her knee, and she was doing something different. She has made that turn 10 million times and never hit the flag and never fell like that. Why did she do it this time? So don't tell me it wasn't her knee. It was her knee. By either compensating for it or being aware of it. Because she shouldn't have been out there. I know we want the fairy tale ending. Now you say, well, Jim, you know, I mean, you know, I know. I've been an athlete. I've denied the reality of it. But there's times when you can't do that. I don't know if I ever told you the story, but about 10 years or so ago, I was in a play, an opening night, within the first 20 minutes of the play. And it was a very physical play. It was called Wait Until Dark. And I had, throughout the play, it was 2 or 3 hour show, and I was on stage most of the time, and it was very physical. I had to do a lot of physical things, a lot of jumping and leap. I had to jump over a couch. I had to run. I mean, there was a lot of physicality in this role. And within the first 20 minutes, unfortunately, a prop was not properly put in the right spot. And because of that, I fell off the stage backwards. I had no idea I was going to fall. I didn't see it coming. It was a shock. It was probably about a 7 to 10 foot drop. It was an elevated stage. And I went backward and fell. And I was in shock as to what happened? Why am I on the floor here? And somehow I raised myself up onto the stage, and when I stepped down on my left foot, oh my God, the pain was excruciating. And the scene was almost over. I sat on the side of a couch, on the arm of a couch, and finished the scene from there. And when the lights went out, I hobbled off. And I was still like, what the heck happened? And I was in serious pain. My foot was swollen. I finished the show. Okay? I finished the show, not knowing what was wrong. I thought maybe I sprained my foot was so swollen. My ankle and my foot was so swollen. But I finished the show. I didn't have an understudy. This was opening night. We had, you know, two more weeks to the show. If I was out of the show was done. I had nobody to play the role. We had two more shows that weekend. I finished. This was kind of the athlete, that athletic mindset, the competitive, you know, that the show must go on. I'm okay, coach. That same mindset I had as being an athlete now came into play as an actor. The show must go on. I'm fine. I can do this. I did the next two shows, the next 2 days, with this bandaged foot and ankle, heavily bandaged. It hurt, but I did it. It was even hard to walk from my car, more or less do the show. But I did it. And then on the Monday after the show, I finally said, well, I've got to go to the doctor, emergency. I mean, this thing is getting black and blue and everything else. So it wasn't smart for what I did, granted. So you say, okay, Jim, you're giving Lindsey Vonn a hard time. You did the same thing. Yes, I know, because of that. I know what it's like to be an athlete. I know what it's like to be have that competitive spirit and say and play through pain. You don't want to get off the field, whether it's a playing field or a stage. It's all a stage. So I know what it's like. I know what she was going through. And so when I go to the hospital, they say, you've got not a torn Achilles tendon. I mean, I was able to walk, but it was a tear in it. And so the doctor said, well, we're going to have to, you know, I mean, it hurt, but it was, I mean, I, you know, if you have a torn tendon. I mean, you can't walk on it. It's done. I mean, that's, you know, that's another career-ending injury for many athletes. And it is a 7 to 8 month recovery. It was with me. And I wasn't even an athlete at the time. This was just to get your mobility back. But I had a cast on for 2 weeks, and then I was in a boot for 6 weeks. So, I mean, this happened in, I think, like September, and I didn't get the boot off probably until January, and then for another 4 or 5 months, I went to physical therapy. So it literally was about 7 or 8 months of rehab for this injury. So yeah, it was a serious injury I went through. And yes, I did deny it, just like Lindsey Vonn did. And in fact, when the doctor tells me now on Monday that I have to get a cast, my first thought is not, well, I have a cast on my foot. My first thought is, what about the play? We still have 2 more weeks of the play to do. And so while they were putting the cast on my leg, and it was up to my knee, even though it was my tendon down by my ankle, my whole foot up to my knee was in a cast. And while they were applying the cast, I never had a cast before in my life, and not only were they putting it on, but because of the injury, for it to heal correctly, they had to tip my foot at an angle. It wasn't like my foot was straight. They had to tip my foot downward. So I needed either crutches or a walker because my foot was not going to be flat on the ground. My foot in this cast was going to be tilted at like almost a 90-degree or 45-degree angle. And while they were putting the cast on and I was seeing the angle of my foot, I was already in my head. Once again, I understand Lindsey Vonn's competitive nature. I understand it because I was doing it. I know that you don't want to say no. You want to try everything you can until you can't. I get it. I lived it many times. This one specifically. And so you would think now, okay, now the play is over. You did those 2 shows, and okay, you did that. But now you have to drop out. Just like Lindsey Vonn blowing out her ACL, okay, you have to drop out of the Olympics now, right? She says, no, I don't. When I tear my Achilles tendon and I have a cast on and my foot is not even flat, so I need crutches, I can't jump over couches or even walk downstairs. I mean, you have to, now I'm done. I'm sitting there looking at the angle of that and saying, okay, well, my foot's in this cast, so it's going to be stabilized here now. But how can I walk without the aid of crutches or a walker? Is there something that I could devise that can still allow me to walk and do this play? Which I should mention, I am not being paid for. This is my point about the competitive spirit and drive. I get what Lindsey Vonn was going through mentally. She had trained. She had a responsibility to her team. She has the competitive. I get it. I devised a contraption. I had a friend of mine cut a piece of wood into a solid block that had the same angle as my foot was up, so that the block of wood could lay flat on the ground. And if I taped my cast to the space and put this block of wood to fill in the space between my heel, which is now elevated, and the ground, and then flat, that I could actually walk. Because now my foot was in a cast. It wasn't going to be ruined. It was stabilized in the cast. But I couldn't walk on my toes with this cast, but if I had connected this block of wood that would be laying flat on the ground, I would fill in that gap with this block of wood, and I would be limping to some extent, but I could walk. And my character actually could use a limp because I was a criminal. It actually helped in the visual of it. So I didn't tell the people at the play yet. I have a cast on. I have to drop out of the show. The show has to be done. I had my friend cut this piece of wood. I used duct tape, black duct tape, and taped this thing on. And when I stood up, I was able to walk, and it didn't hurt. I felt some tinges at places, but it didn't hurt. And my foot was stabilized in this cast. And so when I realized that I could walk and that I could do this, I did it. And I did the remaining six shows with, in fact, people. When the show was over, they didn't even, when I saw me in the lobby, they thought that that was a contraption. They're like, oh, really? Oh, they mean that's not fake? That limp is real? I'm like, yeah, I tore my Achilles tendon. Oh, my goodness. So I get it. But believe me, as much as I wanted to do this play and felt a responsibility to my cast, and I worked hard on this role, and I always wanted to play this role, I had all the same motivations as Lindsay Vonn did. So I understand why she said, I am going, even against logic and advice and everything else. But the difference in my situation was, when I tried to do it, mine wasn't going to be catastrophically damaging. I mean, granted, I should not have been doing this. But I was at least able to minimize the damage by this contraption that we created. And I went on with the show. But in Lindsay Vonn's case, that was a catastrophic injury that had no other possible option, which was clear. I don't know what medications they gave her, but and believe me, if I had put that contraption on and I put weight on it and it hurt, and I would have said, well, okay, I tried to come up with something, but I have to bow out. And I would have done that. And I have done that. There have been times where I was like, look, I can't do it. As much as it hurts to me to say this, I can't do it. As much as that competitive spirit is there, you have to at times face reality, as tough as it is. And I know that athletes never want to face that reality. They never want to admit that they're hurt. They never want to get off the field. And that competitive spirit stays with you regardless. As I said, it came back to me with this incident on this play. But believe me, in all honesty, I wasn't going to sacrifice my long-term health of damaging this, that I might not be able to walk again, perhaps. As much as this play was important to me, as much as I felt the responsibility to myself and to my cast and everything else, at the end of the day, I would have had to have been honest with myself and say, I can't do this. And I would have had to drop out of the play. As disappointing as that was, I would have had to have dealt with it. But I had to look at the long-term aspect of this. And if I would have stood up on that block of wood and it would have hurt, or I would have fallen, I would have said, okay, I gave it a shot. There was some kind of cockeyed idea, but it didn't work. Okay, I can't do it. Play is over. But Lindsay Vonn did not do that. And now she is, you know, in that search for, I wanted that fairy tale ending. I wanted to be able to do that play. I know what that's like. We strive for that fairy tale ending. We want that miracle. But there's a reason why they call things miracles, because they don't happen all the time. And in the midst of chaos, we're always hoping for the fairy tale. But there has to be a time when reality overcomes that. And in the case of Lindsay Vonn, I understand her position. I understand her predicament. But I think that the reality was she should not have gone on a hill with a blown out ACL. If she would have, she was talking about winning a medal. If she got down the hill okay, that would have been a victory. That would have been a victory. And she didn't. It 13 seconds in. Most of those runs are about 90 seconds or so. 13 seconds in. And she had a catastrophic ending. And now her father has said, if it's anything up to me, Lindsay is done. So now after this, now all of a sudden there's a lot more reality, and now there's a lot more, you know, kind of outside advice or influence that's very definitive, like, you are not doing this anymore. But in all honesty, after she tore her ACL, after she blew out her knee a week before, as horrible, as unfair as that is, she should not have been allowed to go on that hill and face now, once again, the fairy tale ending is not that she won a medal, is not that she at least finished the run on a blown out ACL. Now, sadly, the fairy tale ending is going to be, can she walk again? Will she be ambulatory for the rest of her life? That's not the fairy tale ending that she could have had. A fairy tale ending of, she could have gotten the surgery and recovered and certainly have been disappointed, and it's a tough break, but that's life. But I think there was a lot of people, not just Lindsay, that wanted that fairy tale ending. I'm surprised the doctors couldn't have exerted more professional or legal power. I'm surprised the Olympics couldn't have done it. But we and she and so many other people around her were wanting that fairy tale ending. I don't know what's going to happen. As I say, I talk to you now. We're still in the midst of this horrific Savannah Guthrie saga with her mom. As I record this today, her mom is still missing. There are no further leads. I know when I'm recording this, yes, the video of the alleged kidnapper or abductor, we have all that. They detained a guy, proved that he wasn't right. As I record this, there are no new developments. They are still searching. And we are still holding out hope that, A, we're going to catch these people or this person, and B, that Nancy Guthrie is still alive. We want the fairy tale ending. Amidst this chaos, this scenario, this event, amidst this chaos that we've been watching, us, we are now glued to our sets. We're wanting to see, and we're hoping that Nancy can come home, and that they catch these perpetrators, and that we get the fairy tale ending. I don't know what the ending of that story is going to be as well, but I know we're all rooting for it, even though the facts at this point and the realities of it probably tell us what's really going to happen here and how this is going to end. But until we know it, We're looking for that fairy tale ending. I'm all for optimism. I'm all for hope. I'm all for striving. I'm all for aspiration. But I'm also thinking about the aftermath. There are times when we have to admit that things aren't going to be the way we want. And so how can we make the best of that situation? Because then sometimes when we hold out for that fairy tale ending, it is devastating for us. Because we put so much hope in that fairy tale ending that it takes us twice as long to come back. And I just hope that in these chaotic times, that personally and collectively, as a way to want things to make a little more sense in our world, that we don't keep hoping for the fairy tale ending that are against all odds. Yes, fairy tale endings happened. Yes, unlikely things happen, but that's not par for the course. And like when, you know, Lindsey Vonn had said, well, if you don't try, you can't do it. I get that. But the odds against her succeeding after that blowout, the odds of her succeeding without the injury were still high at 41 years old. There were no, it was still improbable. But with this injury, it was 99.9999% that it was not going to come out good. And it didn't. As I said, the night before her run, everybody said, well, this is a catastrophic injury. Won't be, you know, terrible, but you don't know Lindsey. Yeah, I know. But you know what? You can't fight nature. You can't fight reality. If you build a house that doesn't have a strong foundation, I don't care how much you want that house to be beautiful, it's going to collapse. We've seen that happen. And then we go, oh, well. No, oh, well. Why did we have to create the devastation? Lindsey Vonn right now probably would be out of the hospital, having had her ACL surgery and having a very good prognosis as to her rehab and being able to get back to normal, you know, walking and running again. Not as an athlete, not as a downhill skier, but for the rest of her life, she's only 41 years old. But as we talk now, she's had at least three surgeries. She may have four. She may have five. We hope that she can walk again. We don't know. Was that striving for that fairy tale ending so important to have overlooked the reality and overlooked the possible detrimental future that it would put you in? I know we're looking for fairy tale endings. I know the world is chaotic. But don't let an irrational sense overcome you. In these tough times, we can hope for the best, but we also must look at reality and look at the bigger picture. Because if we get swept up in fairy tale endings, not only will we feel more depressed because we didn't get the fairy tale ending, but then we may also be even compounded on that with the catastrophic results of delusionally going against reality. I know that tough times make us want fairy tale endings. But that's why they're called fairy tale endings. That's why they're called miracles. We can't expect miracles. We can't count on them. They are not the norm. That's what makes miracles special. We can't discount them. We can't put them aside. But we can't count on them all the time. The more that we can keep our hope but stay rooted in reality, the better we will all be off, the better we will be in the long run. If the inevitable does happen, our crash, whether it's physical or emotional, won't be as strong, won't be as hard, and won't be as catastrophic. Our goal is to go on, not to be defeated. Hope and reality can coexist, no matter how much chaos there is. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And of course, you can always get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 508. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.